This is episode 7 of UFO Encounters. This week I'm reading from Carl Svosil's book, UFOs, Unidentified Aerial Phenomena, Observations, Explanations and Speculations. When I have guests on my podcasts, I read their books to work out questions for the episodes. And when reading these books, I always find such fascinating information that never makes it into the podcast. And here I get a chance to give you a peek into the book. And I've put a link to the book in the show notes. I did seek permission to record the extract from the book, and the author kindly said yes. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe. So first of all, I'm going to read a short section that is called Bizarre Statement by Russian Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev. This is what Carl has written. There is a bizarre anecdote involving the then Russian Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev making some outlandish remarks while television cameras were still rolling. When a journalist inquired whether the President of Russia is provided with classified information on aliens upon receiving the briefcase required to initiate the country's nuclear arsenal, Medvedev responded, "I tell you the first and last time, together with the briefcase with nuclear codes, the President of the country is given a special top secret folder. This folder is entirely devoted to the strangers who visited our planet. The report is provided by the secret special service that handles the control over aliens in our country. More detailed information on this topic can be obtained from the documentary Men in Black. I will not tell you how many of them are among us because it may cause panic." And Carl's made a note that says, when referring to Men in Black, Medvedev might have been referring to a Russian documentary. And the next section is called Hand-Waving and Hand-Raising UFO Responses. The Soviet Union reportedly had the ability to summon UFOs to at least one of their military bases. As recounted in an interview with Major General Vasily Alexeyev of the Russian Air Force Space Communications Center Moscow in 1997, observers in the Soviet Union utilized the technique to intentionally create the appearance of a UFO by increasing military activity, including the transportation of special loads, which may have been nuclear devices. This orchestrated activity resulted in a corresponding appearance of a UFO, establishing a correlation between military actions and UFO sightings. As a result, it was concluded that whoever was responsible for the UFOs possessed advanced intelligence and sensitivity to such activities. At certain testing sites, presumed to be nuclear bases, individuals were able to establish communication with the UFOs beyond simply summoning them. The UFOs typically appeared as spheres, although they occasionally manifested themselves in different forms. Communication occurred through physical signals or gestures. For example, pointing an arm in various directions caused the UFO sphere to flatten in the corresponding direction. Raising arms 3 times elicited a response from the UFO, causing it to flatten out in the vertical direction 3 times as well. Okay, we're going to move on to another part of the book. And this part is titled Tehran Incident in 1976. On September 18, 1976, a strange object was spotted in the sky over Tehran, Iran. The object was seen by multiple witnesses and appeared to change colour and shape. Hussein Parousi, a night shift supervisor at the air traffic control tower in Mehrabad Airport, observed the object through binoculars and confirmed its unusual behaviour. The object moved northward, oscillating up and down, at an estimated distance of 5 miles and an altitude of 6,000 feet. It vanished abruptly, only to reappear a mile away within a few seconds. Seen through binoculars, the object's right and left ends appeared blue in colour, with a flashing red light in the middle. To confirm that his observation was accurate, he passed the binoculars to one of his trainees, who saw the same thing. Despite the object's stunning brightness, Parousi was able to discern its shape, which resembled that of a starfish. The tower radar was under repair, so Parousi could not confirm the sighting by radar. However, concerned about the object's potential impact on incoming flights, Parousi reported it to the Iranian Air Force. Two Imperial Iranian Air Force F-4 Phantom II jet interceptors were dispatched for investigation. First, Captain Mohammad Reza Azizkhani flew an F-4 Phantom fighter jet from Shahrukh Air Force Base. The object was so large and brilliant that it could be seen from almost 70 miles away. Despite increasing his velocity and surpassing Mach 2 speeds, Azizkhani was unable to catch up with the incredibly fast object as it made its way swiftly to the city limits of Tehran. Azizkhani was then ordered to return. However, the object suddenly reappeared directly above the city of Tehran, having travelled a great distance at implausible speeds. It appeared to have stopped mid-flight above Tehran. Azizkhani headed toward the object again. When he approached within approximately 25 nautical miles, his navigational equipment on board began to malfunction, causing confusion and concern. The equipment returned to normal when he veered away from the object, but every time he got close, it would shut down again. Azizkhani returned to base without any clues or explanations for what he had witnessed. He reported instrumentation malfunctions whenever he was within a certain distance from the object. Squadron Commander Parviz Jafari, with First Lieutenant Jalal Demirian serving as the weapons officer, was then scrambled to intercept the object and took off in another F-4 Phantom jet. Here is a short excerpt from a Defense Intelligence Agency report, and may be inaccurate in some details. The size of the radar return was comparable to that of a 707 tanker, a Boeing 707 Stratotanker. The visual size of the object was difficult to discern because of its intense brilliance. The light that it gave off was that of flashing strobe lights arranged in a rectangular pattern and alternating blue, green, red and orange in colour. The sequence of the lights was not so fast that all the colours could be seen at once. As Jafari's F-4 Phantom jet came closer, he could faintly discern a diamond-shaped object with lights on all points of the diamond. He then noticed that four other objects with different shapes separated from the main object at different times. Whenever the objects were close, his radar jammed, and his radar communications were garbled. One of the objects approached his jet, and he tried to launch a heat-seeker AIM-9 missile at it, but the missile panel went out. The experience was both interesting and terrifying. Jafari was uncertain about his next move, as he had no way to counter if the object fired a missile at him. The object continued to approach him, and he became increasingly scared as his missile panel was down and communication with the tower was lost. Jafari believed that, if the object got any closer, he would have to eject from the plane, but even his ejection equipment was malfunctioning. To avoid a head-on collision, Jafari veered to the left, only to find the object had disappeared. Another detached object began circling his jet, and even when he tried to get away from it, it continued to follow him. Jafari decided to perform a quick negative G nosedive, an aviation maneuver in which the pilot pulls the nose of the aircraft down and accelerates towards the ground. During the dive, the pilot experiences negative G forces, which push them out of the seat and towards the aircraft's ceiling. However, the object shot straight past him and disappeared. With his instrumentation failing, Jafari finally received a signal to communicate with the tower and was ordered to return to base. On his descent, Jafari saw that the main diamond-shaped object was still stationary. As he continued in his turn away from it, the second object that had approached him returned to the primary object for a perfect rejoin. This or another object broke off from the diamond-shaped one and made its way towards Jafari. However, to his relief, the object did not appear to be targeting him as it descended toward the ground. The object emitted a luminous light that was so bright that it made the sands visible from as far as 15 miles away. As he approached the landing site, Jafari was instructed to conduct a final flyover to gather any valuable observations of an impact site and to identify the object more closely. However, as he got closer, his radio malfunctioned and its instruments went haywire. Jafari was only able to resume communication with the tower after he had distanced himself from the object. Despite his attempts to gather more information, he was ordered to return to base. The main diamond-shaped object in the sky had vanished into thin air while he was landing. On the next day, Jafari and Damirian flew by helicopter to the area where they thought the light hit the ground, but they found nothing. Occupants of nearby houses only reported hearing a loud noise and a bright flash of light during the night. Okay, so this week I was reading from Carl Sovsil's book, UFOs, Unidentified Aerial Phenomena, Observations, Explanations and Speculations. And if you want to buy the book, there is info and a link in the show notes. Great way to support the podcast is to sign up on Patreon. On the Alien UFO Podcast Patreon, when you sign up for $5 a month, you get an extended episode every week. And for $2 a month, you get an extended episode every month. Just go to patreon.com/AlienUFOPodcast. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app. Make sure you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.